I welcome you to week number 27 of our 4.5 year journey through all of God's inspired word. That means that we are about halfway through the first year of our journey, and we are still in the books of Moses. Specifically, we're going to begin today in Exodus chapter number 30, where Moses is up on Mount Sinai, and God is giving him all the details that he needs to oversee the building of the tabernacle. This tabernacle is effectively God's royal tent that will sit smack dab in the middle of the encampment of Israel as they make their way the rest of the journey to the promised land. This royal complex has a central building in it, a tent building, that is made up of two rooms. The back room is the most holy place, or the Holy of Holies. That's where God's throne will be located. That's the Ark of the Covenant. Then in front of that is the holy place where the priests come in and out all through the day during doing all sorts of priestly things. And then outside of that is the courtyard where the people of Israel will come and meet with the priests and offer their worship to God. So all of that is being described in great detail. In fact, I think part of the process involves Moses walking through a 3D full-scale representation of what this is supposed to look like when it is complete. And now he's writing all of those things down with all the dimensions and helping the man that will build it understand what it needs to represent, or at least how precise he needs to make it so that it will represent things of the future. In fact, when we get to the book of Hebrews, we are reminded that all of these physical things represented spiritual realities that came through Jesus Christ. So in chapter number 30, which we closed up on last week, we were talking about the altar of incense, which is located on the dividing line in the shrine building between the holy place in front, where the priests do their work, and the most holy place in the back, where God's throne is located. This altar of incense is also a prayer altar, because that's the purpose of incense. It is a symbolic representation of prayers ascending into the presence of God. In the book of Revelation, chapter number 6, as we're considering the breaking of the seven seals on the scroll of God's ultimate wrath, seal number 5 opens up with understanding that there are martyred saints underneath a heavenly prayer altar, and they are praying for vengeance, for God's retribution against the enemies of the faith. And it's interesting that that book shows that there is a real prayer altar in the heavenly realm, that this prayer altar that Moses is about to make represents. So Exodus chapter 30, verse 1, real quick, you shall make an altar on which to burn incense. You shall make it of acacia wood. Acacia wood is a durable, readily available wood in the Middle East. Verse 2, let's talk about the dimensions. A cubit shall be its length, and a cubit its breadth. So that's around the top. If you are looking down on it, it's one cubit square. And so that's 20.7 inches. So a foot and 8.7 inches. I'm using the long cubit, as I've explained before, because I think that's the one Moses would have used. And then it shall be square, and two cubits shall be its height. And so two cubits brings that up to 41.4 inches, or 3 feet, 5.4 inches. So it's up at a very reasonable height where a person could be putting the hot coals on it and then using those hot coals to ignite the incense used during the prayer ceremony. Its horns shall be of one piece with it. We'll discover in a moment that it's overlaid in gold, and apparently the gold is shaped up on the top with horns at the corner. Now, we've come across these horns before on the sacrifice altar, and I shared with you then, I can't tell whether they are stylized or whether they are supposed to be realistic to animal horns. Well, this time the horns are more than likely stylized because this is not a huge prayer altar. And so you wouldn't put great big bull-sized horns on the four corners of this altar. So they're probably just small and representative of the strength of God. Verse 3, you shall overlay it with pure gold, and around its sides and its horns, and you shall make a molding of gold around it. The molding helps keep the coals and the fragrant incense on the top. You shall make two golden rings for it. Under its molding, on two opposite sides of it, you shall make them, and they shall be holders for poles with which to carry it. And you shall make the poles of acacia wood and overlay them with gold. And so all of these things have to be portable. And in most cases, it would appear that the poles are used only to move the items from place to place. Once you arrive at that place and the item is put into its position, the poles are pulled out of the holders and stored somewhere appropriate until the next move. That seems to be the case with the altar of incense. The item, which that is not true about, and it seems to be the unique item, is the Ark of the Covenant, the throne of God, the cherubim chariot, that is the portable on poles throne of God. Those poles remain in place the whole time. And the reason I brought that up last time, and I want to bring it back now as we transition to the next verse, is that the placement of this prayer altar, I think, comes between the two junting forward poles of God's throne. I've suggested to you before that those poles may have held back, like a draping pullback, the curtain which divides between the holy place in the front where the priests do their work and the most holy place in the back where the Ark of the Covenant is actually located. So here is the placement for the prayer altar. Verse 6, you shall put it in front of the veil that is above the Ark of the Testimony, in front of the mercy seat that is above the testimony where I will meet with you. So the prayer altar seems to be placed right there at the dividing line between the two. That's the veil line. And it is in front of, therefore, the top of the Ark of the Covenant, the mercy seat. So in my mind, is the way I picture this, the way I see this, is that when verse number 7 happens, the priest is looking smack dab at the Ark of the Covenant, at the throne of God. So verse 7, Aaron shall burn fragrant incense on it every morning. When he dresses the lamps, he shall burn it. And when Aaron sets up the lamps at twilight, he shall burn it, a regular incense offering before he who is throughout your generations. So the high priest, the priest, depending on what particular day of the year it is going to be standing here offering incense mid-morning, about 9 a.m., mid-afternoon, about 3 p.m., as the sacrifice is offered for Israel on the altar of sacrifice out in front, and the people are gathering. Now, why is that such a big deal? Because that means that on the day that Jesus was crucified, we know that he was crucified at the exact moment that the first sacrifice was offered that day, the morning sacrifice. So the high priest, since it was a special holiday, would have been officiating. So he would have been right in front of this curtain offering incense on the prayer altar at the exact same moment that Jesus' crucifixion began. And then he would have been back again at 3 p.m. offering the afternoon or the evening sacrifice at the exact same moment that Jesus died, which means that the high priest, Annas, is who we're talking about here. Not Annas, I got the wrong name. That's the traditional high priest of the Jews, but the official high priest, Caiaphas, Joseph Caiaphas, would have been standing right in front of that veil in the temple that ripped from top to bottom. So he would have been an eyewitness of that event. Now, the Ark of the Covenant was long gone by that time, so he would have only been able to see into an empty room. But having that temple veil torn by God would have been quite the experience for him. Verse number 9, and this is going to help us with a future event. You shall not offer unauthorized incense on it, or a burnt offering, or a grain offering, and shall not pour drink offering on it. So only the authorized formula of incense is to be burnt on this altar. You're not supposed to be putting any meat on it, because it's not intended for that. You're not going to put any grain offering on it. That's not what it's intended to burn. And you don't pour drink offerings on it. All of those things happen by the sacrifice altar out front. This altar is specifically for prayer incense alone, with one annual exception. Verse number 10. Aaron shall make atonement on its horns once a year. With the blood of the sin offering of atonement, he shall make atonement for it once in the year throughout your generations. It is most holy to he who is. This is a reference to Yom Kippur, the Day of Atonement, the 10th day of the 7th Jewish month. We've only heard it kind of mentioned in passing at this point. We're not really got any of the details for it just yet. But getting ahead of the story, effectively, high priest will smear some of the blood of the sacrifice on the Day of Atonement on the horns of this prayer altar as he walks by it into the most holy place and puts other parts of this blood sacrifice right there on the top of the mercy seat of the Ark of the Covenant, right between the cherubim, the two four-faced, four-winged angelic creatures that are represented on the Ark, the place where God is imagined to be seated as the King of Kings and the Lord of Lords. So that's the only time, once a year, that the high priest is going to put something other than incense on this altar, and the only time he will go around it, between the poles of the Ark of the Covenant and go into the most holy place. Verse 10, verse 11. He who is said to Moses, so we've now changed to a different topic. When you take the census of the people of Israel, then each shall give a ransom for his life to he who is, when you number them, that there be no plague among them when you number them. So they're going to take a census of the people, probably on an annual basis. And this will be when an annual substitute payment will be given for the upkeep of the tabernacle. This is what is referred to as the temple tax. That's sometimes what you'll hear it. Or the poll tax, as in poll is in your head. So a head tax that's mentioned in the New Testament. This, again, I'm telling you, is kind of an upkeep and a reminder annually to the Jewish people that they need this sacrificial system to keep them in right relationship with the Holy God. Verse 13, each one who is numbered in the census, and it's the adult males specifically that we're looking at the number for. Each one who is numbered in the census shall give this, half a shekel according to the shekel of the sanctuary, and then an explanatory note, the shekel is 20 gerahs, half a shekel as an offering to he who is. Now back at this time, shekels were not coins. They were weighted amounts of silver, probably in a little lump. And a shekel probably represented something like 2 days' wages back at the beginning of this time period. So a half shekel would basically be 1 day's wage. I hope I said that correct a second ago. A shekel is 2 days' wages, and so a half a shekel would be 1 day's wage. In the New Testament, we'll see kind of that idea put forward as well. So everybody, every male, every year gives 1 day's salary to the upkeep of the tabernacle. The Jewish people kept that up pretty much without interruption until the temple was destroyed in AD 70. And the Romans then redirected those monies as kind of a penalty tax on the Jewish people for some period of time thereafter. Verse number 14 back in our text, everyone who is numbered in the census from 20 years old and upward shall give he who is his offering. So this is where we talk about the Jewish concept of majority age. When you hit 20, that was apparently your majority age, and you were expected to now act as an adult, including paying the annual upkeep tax. Verse 15, and I find this very interesting. The rich shall not give more. The poor shall not give less than the half shekel when you give he who is his offering to make atonement for your lives. So this is not a progressive sort of tax structure. The rich people, each individual, is expected to give 1 day's wage on the common scale. The poorer people are expected to do the same thing because everyone is being treated as an individual and they have to be saved by God's standard, which is, if you are not holy, then you need a substitute. And in this case, the substitute is represented by this half shekel pole or half shekel offering. Now, the question immediately comes up, well, what happens if you're so poor you can't afford this? Well, more than likely what has happened is somebody who's wealthy is going to give you what you need in order to pay. And since they give it to you as a gift, it is now yours. So they're not giving more on behalf of themselves. They are helping you out. Verse 16. You shall take the atonement money from the people of Israel and shall give it for the service of the tent of meeting, that it may bring the people of Israel to remembrance before he who is, so as to make atonement for your lives. So this is, as I keep representing it, an upkeep service amount every single year. And in the story, I think it is of Josiah, maybe, one of the revivalist kings, they had a box where this was supposed to be collected on a regular basis. And they weren't making the repairs during his father's reign. And so Josiah was kind of stuck with having to catch everything up. And so that's what its purpose is upkeep. In the New Testament, this is the story where Peter is approached by those making the collection so they can mark your name off your off their list of those that were adult Israeli males. And they asked Peter, is your master, Jesus, going to pay this thing or not? And Peter's response was, of course he is. And Peter then goes in the house, and Jesus says, Peter, I've got a question for you. When it comes to paying taxes, that is, penalty taxes, does a king accept them from family members? And Peter's response was, no. He's going to accept it from non-family members. And then Jesus says, that's true. But so that we do not offend them, this is what I need you to do, Peter. So Jesus was basically saying, I'm God's family. I'm his son. I actually would not be required to pay this tax by law. But so that we don't get everybody upset about it, let's make sure yours and mine gets paid. So he tells Peter to go out and use a fishing hook and line, which is not the normal way that Peter fished. And when he pulled the very first fish in its mouth was a 2-drachma coin. That's 2 days' wages. And he was to use that in order to pay both his and Jesus' upkeep fee for that particular year. All right, Exodus chapter 30, verse 17. He who is said to Moses, you shall make also a bronze basin with its stand of bronze for washing, and you shall put it between the tent of meeting and the altar, and you shall put water in it. Now, this was the only other thing other than the altar of incense that is part of the articles within the temple courtyard and in the temple or the tabernacle building that we hadn't talked about yet. So this is a great big water tank. You should not think of it like a bird bath. I know there's plenty of places that kind of represent it in that fashion. This thing needs a lot of water, so it is a great big cauldron-sized tank. And the Hebrew word actually has the sense of a great big cauldron. I believe it's probably big enough that you could actually get into it and be immersed, as I've shared with before. The stand that we're talking here is probably the platform on which it sits so that maybe little spigots around the sides can let a little water out at a time and you can wash your hands and your feet, because it says here with which, verse 19, Aaron and his son shall wash their hands and their feet when they go into the tent of meeting and when they come near the altar to minister to burn a food offering to he who is, they shall wash with water so that they may not die. They shall wash their hands and their feet so that they may not die. It shall be a statute forever for them, even to him and to his offspring throughout their generations. Now, the the temple had everything on a much larger scale, and so there's this monstrous water tank. It was a half sphere, so that's a hemisphere, so a great big bowl that sat upon the full scale, on the backs of full-scale sized bulls, 12 of them. And it held an awful lot of water. I can't remember the exact amount, but it was a swimming pool's worth of water. So this is just a smaller version of that. It's a big tank of water that will be used to consecrate priests when they're ordained, but also pragmatically to let priests stop here and scrub off the blood and the grime of their hands and feet before they move on to the next bit of sacrifice work that they're going to do. Next thing we need is we need anointing oil and incense. So he who is said to Moses, take the finest spices of liquid myrrh, 500 shekels, and that's a weight, so that's something like 12 pounds of liquid myrrh, which is a plant sap, and of sweet-smelling cinnamon, half that much, so 250, so that's about 6 pounds, and 250 of aromatic cane. That's not sugar cane. That's a different form of reed that has good smell to it. And then 500 of cassia, which is just a variation of cinnamon. According to the shekel of the sanctuary, and a hin of olive oil. That's about 1.2 gallons of olive oil. And then you're going to make of these a sacred anointing oil, blended as if by a perfumer. It shall be a holy anointing oil. When you put all that stuff together, this is what you end up with. You end up with about a little over 40 pounds of material, and it renders around 5 gallons of a thick anointing oil that has a heavy cinnamon scent to it. Now, what is it to be used for? Verse 26, with it you shall anoint the tent of meeting and the ark of the testimony and the table and its utensils and the lampstands and its utensils and the altar of incense and the altar of burnt offering with all its utensils and the basin and its stand. You shall consecrate them that they may be most holy. Whatever touches them will become holy. So this is the holy anointing oil that will be used in the ceremony of dedicating the tabernacle to use. And then it will also be used to dedicate priests to use. Verse 30. You shall anoint Aaron and his sons and consecrate them that they may serve me as priests. And you shall say to the people of Israel, this shall be my holy anointing oil throughout your generations. It shall not be poured out on the body of an ordinary person, and you shall not make any like it as composition. It is holy. It shall be holy to you. Whoever makes compounds any like it, or whoever puts any of it on an outsider, shall be cut off from his people. So this is special religious anointing oil. It has no secular purpose whatsoever.